A singer in a smoky room, a smell of wine, a cheap perfume. For a smile they can share the night. It goes on and on and on and on. Strangers, sing it with me now. Hey, Tim, where are they?
Rob.
Up and down the bar. Yeah.
Rob, where? What are you...
Shadows.
I'm not sure what you... Why are you...
I found the backing track for Don't Stop Believing by Journey.
Good.
I thought to get us in the mood. Obviously, the listeners can't hear it, but imagine it in your head, listeners. A siren, a song. I'll just do this last bit. In the night. You know?
Awesome.
There it is.
That was beautiful.
Thank you. Thank you.
I loved it. I'm moved.
Well, we're rocking.
I could see the boulevard, actually. Up and down.
Those shadows, could you catch them?
Oh, caught them.
Hiding, where are they? Somewhere in the night. I don't know
any
where.
Any of the other words.
Oh, I should know them. I've sung it. It's a popular function one, but yeah, I don't know. Oh. But it's the one that you can get away with by going...
That could be our first quiz.
What are the words to Journey's Don't Stop Believing?
And if you do know...
Send us yourself singing them.
Please, exactly, do that.
And I will put them over a backing track.
Oh.
And release it. in the next podcast.
Oh, in the next podcast.
Yeah, the winner, the best one.
Great.
That's right.
I'll be flooded. I said that in a really weird way because I had tea in my mouth.
Yeah, it's not wine this time, listeners. It's
no,
tea.
We learnt our lesson last night.
Wow.
Rob and I, suffering the old hangover.
Yeah.
Blues.
Yeah.
And a bit of anxiety thrown in there for pleasure and fun.
Yeah, maybe more serious topic for the day, but the Sunday night hangover beer fears, I think, is something that gets everybody. You know, Monday morning, you're lying there in bed, you want to sleep, you need to sleep because you've got a whole week ahead of you, but can you know? The one time when you need to know, you're thinking about the night before, you're worrying about what an idiot you were, you're sweating a bit, you know?
Little pearl of sweat.
Anyway, that's all to come.
Here's a quick question, though.
Okay.
Rob Castell, you once told me a word. Along the lines of Schadenfreude or...
Phulangst.
Yes, that's the one. Phulangst.
Phulangst. It's a... Now, I might have to check, but I believe it's either a Norwegian, a sort of old Norse term. And basically, it's a word that specifically... I'm actually just looking it up right now. It's a word that specifically refers to that feeling the next day after drinking. When you just panic and you feel like...
You have angst that you might have been a fool.
Happily, the phonetics allow for that. But I don't know what it literally means. But yeah, exactly. It is the angst of being a fool. Maybe that is even where it comes from. I don't know. But anyway, so you know you've been there with everybody. Everybody says to you, "Oh, it was fine. You went to bed and, you know, don't worry. Everyone was a bit drunk, whatever.
You slurred a bit, it's fine."
But you're determined that something bad happened and you've got that doom sensation going around your brain. So, yeah, it's a really good term. And you can just say now, "Oh, God, I've got the fool angst." And people say, "Oh, okay, fair enough."
When you can name it, you can own it.
Exactly.
You have power over something if you have its name.
So, here we go. Yeah. It, also known as performance anxiety, apparently.
That doesn't sound very Norwegian.
No, is it Norwegian? I don't know, but it's sort of... An irrational fear of failure, this says. But anyway, it's along those sort of lines, I think.
Yeah, I like it. Well, we had it today.
Yeah.
But it was mightily assuaged by the giving of thanks at the Thanksgiving dinner that we have shared with our family and our friends this afternoon.
It was lovely. We had turkey, we had cranberry sauce. Dad read a little bit about the history of Thanksgiving.
He did.
It was
out of the blue. Out of nowhere, out of left field, off the plate. Dad was there. Print-offs.
He did it with concision.
He did it with concision because he omitted the lengthy George Washington section of the story.
Which we were all grateful for because Dad decided to make this little speech just as we'd all been served food.
But we ate. He was the only... I was eating.
Yeah, that's true. I was.
Everyone else was. I checked. But I really admired that. And also, I actually didn't know... Really, most of what he told us. I had a vague idea.
I didn't know at all that the day of Thanksgiving has changed over the course of time.
No, neither did I.
So I suppose it was originally in June, I think June the 29th or something like that. And then in 1941, Roosevelt changed it.
Yes.
Because of productivity leading up to Christmas or something.
Yeah, he was an economically minded man.
Right.
Yeah, I was really surprised that the giving of thanks was a celebration of a ceremony that was performed between the pilgrims and the Native Americans.
Mm. Yeah, and yeah, because I was under the impression that they kind of just sort of stormed in, gave everybody smallpox, basically ruined
ransacked
a lot of people's lives,
yeah,
and then gave thanks that they were all right the following year. But it seems like you say that there was more of a generosity of spirit and understanding,
yeah,
which is great.
Yeah.
So yeah.
So it was good to be a part of. So yes, that did help with the food angst. So Rob, a couple of things that I just wanted to address with you today.
Right, is this a sort of contents page?
Kind of a contents page. Not well, it's just a segue into the first story that I'd like you to share, because I have I have postponed the telling of this story since I received an email from you, which was actually an excuse for having not edited the podcast out. There I was in Leeds City Museum, and I thought, oh, that's nice, got an email from Rob, it's about the podcast. Obviously he's going to be saying it's done, wrapped up, done and dusted. No. Sorry, Rach. Yesterday was the day off, and instead of doing the edits and being really productive, I went to York, then to a country pub, where I drank 8 pints of delicious local ale before getting lost in some fields and being chased by 3 dogs. True. Which did tickle me, and I have had a very, very, very distinct image in my mind of you racing through some fields and kind of like running and then like doing a little jump every time the dog kind of like yaps at your like in cartoons, you know how they do. What happened there, Rob? Tell us about it.
Okay, well, first of all, I mean, given this talk of fool angst and now this talk of ale drinking, I'd like to, you know, point out I do like a drink, but it's not all I do. I've done it a bit recently, but that's, you know, November kind of brings that vibe. The day off.
Why?
Yeah, it's cold outside, isn't it? And have a nice ale.
What about in the summer when it's hot outside? You want Ooh. To have a nice cool lager? I fear that this may be a repetitive excuse. Well, it's April, isn't it? I mean,
I don't drink that much in April, generally, actually. But November, here it was. I was, you know, it wasn't just me as well. We all went to this lovely local pub, the Bagby Inn, which was a drive from our cottage where we were doing the barbershop tour in Yorkshire. But we were told we could walk back, so the plan was to leave the car and then walk back. We had a lovely evening, and these 8 pints, I mean, they were quite low percentage session ales, so you don't really realise they're quite watery, and you just, you know,
I was thinking you must have been really full.
I wasn't really. I was doing quite a lot of dancing. We played some pool.
Oh.
They had a great jukebox. It was okay, so things were going well. And then the landlord said, oh, I'll tell you the best way to go. What you do is you go through this man's garden next door. Don't worry about it. It's public right of way. And there was just a sense of, is that really right? Does he just not like this man?
Or did he just not like you?
Possibly just wanted to get us, yeah. Although we'd given him some good business that night. He seemed to like us.
Yeah.
And they thought Lara was a celebrity as well, which was quite fun. They were taking photos of her.
Which particular celebrity?
A new one. But so we walked through this man's garden in the middle of the night, because we were still there till about 12, went over this first stile, and then, you know, just a pair of eyes suddenly flying towards us through the black.
The hound of hell.
The horrible hound of hell.
The
indeed.
Horrible hound of hell. The beast of the darkness, or whatever we'll call it.
The dastardly beast of the deep, or whatever. But and then it was joined by 2 other sets of eyes, and then barking. And we were literally just in the middle of a pitch black field with these dogs just running towards us, barking. And I was actually quite pleased with myself. I mean, I've had dogs in the past, and, you know, I sort of, it's kind of good to be a bit like a dog, I suppose. Or at least, I felt like I became a bit of an animal, especially having had a few beers. So I kind of like turned towards these dogs and sort of tried to make myself quite big, and I sort of went, it just made like kind of frantic but assertive noises, you know.
Wow.
And they did stop. The dogs got to me, and then we kind of had almost like a little dog standoff sort of thing. Then the
while everyone else just ran away.
Well, everyone was just a bit like just freaked out, and there was about three or four of us. Then we walked on a little bit before the dogs seemed to go away. They kind of held back. It was like, okay, fine. Then there was a whistle, a torch flashing around the field. And then the dogs were running again, but this time there was calls for the dogs, and it felt a little bit more controlled. And I said into the darkness, "Please don't set your dogs on us." It's really like a kind of Famous Five moment or something. And this guy was really angry, and he was in his bathrobe, and he obviously had work the next day because it was the middle of the week. And he came over to us, and I said, I'm so sorry, we're actors. We are humble players.
We came on holiday by accident.
Yeah, I said, you know, the man, he said, why are you here? I said, the man from the pub told us to come through the garden. He said it was probably right, and he literally, suddenly we got an insight into the backstory of all this. He was like, oh, that man, I am going to show him. You could see the rage, and it was obviously like, oh, I see, this is like a feud. That we've just, you know,
you were pawns.
Exactly, pawns in their twisted chess game, right?
Bitter.
Yeah.
Oh.
And then he sent us. He said, "Right, you shouldn't be here, but it's fine. I'm going to go. I'll see to him tomorrow. Go over that stile. 10 minutes that way, you should be fine." Maybe he was having a few laughs because 10 minutes later we were in an airfield, literally a little airfield. And it was just chaos. I mean, it took us this 10 minute walk took us over an hour. Because we then had to go all the way down onto the road, back round through. But it was fun. It was a lot of fun.
Oh, good. That was awesome. That definitely lived up to my anticipation of the story.
Oh, good. Yeah.
What it did remind me of, though, was times in your past when you have been confronted with difficult situations. And it reminded me of that time when you got mugged. And you just cried.
I did. But the mugging was so...
It was very gentle mugging, wasn't it?
It was verbal mugging. He said to me...
He spotted it as a sucker. He was like, right.
I was about 15. And, you know, it serves me right for being in Reading on a Friday night and, like, going to RG1s and thinking I was all hard. And then I came out and I was, like, by myself walking along Reading High Street. And I was, you know, I was a bit scared anyway. And this big guy stepped out and he goes, "Oi, do you know I mug people for a living?" And I was like, "No, I don't know.
I'm sorry, I didn't know anything about you."
He said, anyway, he was really specific. I think specificity is hard to, you know...
Say?
hard to do anything with, because he said, "Give me £10. He didn't say, "Give me your wallet." He didn't say, "Oh, you know, give me your phone, give me everything. I'll kill you." He just said, "Give me £10. So, I literally, I looked in my wallet and I had £10. So I thought, well, I can solve this. This transaction could be over if I give him the £10. I've done what he wants.
He's only doing his job after all.
You know, that £10 was only given to me by mum probably a few hours before. Well. So it's all right. I'm 15. I don't want to die. But in giving him the £10 and being intimidated, I just started crying.
Sorry to laugh.
I just started crying. And, you know, he wasn't, like, sympathetic, but he didn't mock me either. He just, I guess he accepted that that's part of the job, isn't it? Sometimes if you're a mugger, you're going to upset people. And
no matter how hard you try to be specific and...
Yeah, I mean, it was almost like he could have said, "Please." He'd let me know what his occupation was straight off, which was good. I knew where I stood then.
Yeah.
He asked me for a specific amount of money. Not too greedy either. Didn't say, "Give me £20. Didn't look in my wallet and go, "You got more than 10 there, haven't you?" Was happy with 10. Clearly just wanted 10.
He'd done a budget.
Exactly.
Didn't need any more than 10.
He needed to get home, probably needed a bit of food, etc.
Yeah. So and was the 90s?
This would have been 99.
Right, yeah. So things...
A lot of worries about the millennium bug, probably.
Oh, that's probably playing in the back of your mind as well.
Exactly.
That one little incident.
So there we go.
The opportunity to purge all those fears.
Oh, I cry, I did. Yeah. The life and times of a fool.
Aw, bless you. So, right, Rob, I don't think I've actually seen you since the last podcast sale. Is that true?
That is, I think, true, yeah.
Because you have been on Rural Tour.
We have.
And I've been busy.
Well, let's do a what have you been up to section.
What a great idea, Rob.
Hey, Rach.
Hey.
What have you been up to?
Well, Rob, let me tell you. I've been up to a lot of stuff. I, as usual, I'm doing a multiplicity of sometimes complementary, sometimes non-complementary activities. Been filming a lot of stuff, actually. So that's going really well. So that's essentially become my business now. So in order to make money, I film events.
Right.
Which is awesome. But that's great because now I kind of have this steady, lifeline of income. And that's allowing me to do a lot more work on, for example, my band, Rye.
Mm.
And also I'm exec producing a documentary because obviously the Congo project's kind of on hold at the moment, as I talked about in the last podcast.
Oh, so you're executive producing a new documentary?
Yeah. Because...
Pray tell.
Interestingly, right? So this is a good... This was a perfect moment of how to get into this kind of thing. I was filming an event that's run by my friend Amanda, and actually it's coming up again. I don't know when this is going to go out, but look up Midnight Stakeout because it's so awesome. And Amanda runs these nights where you get a 7-course meal and cocktails and coffee and sweets and entertainment for like 45 quid.
Oh, great.
The last one was amazing, and I was filming it. And afterwards, I was filming the entertainment, which was in a pub in Mile End. And I was sort of panning around the room through my camera, and I was kind of getting something into focus. And I could see, I was like looking at a person, thinking, I'll just use this person to get into focus. And as I looked through the lens, I saw Bob, my friend Bob, that I haven't seen for years. Kind of, he just came into focus through the lens. And I was like, oh, Bob. Went over and said hello. And he was like, oh my God, I've been, this is so weird because I was thinking about you. Wanted to talk to you about this film that I've been working on. And he has been making a film pretty much solo for the past 2 years. It's a documentary about this fascinating pop cultural kind of niche icon from the 60s, this very eccentric kind of maverick pirate radio producer and presenter, this guy called Reg Calvert, who, if you look him up, had an incredible kind of life story. Was one of the first people in the 50s to late 50s, early 60s to bring kind of American rock acts to the UK, and then he moved into pirate radio, and he had like copycat acts who did impressions of like Elvis Presley and Buddy Holly, and then he moved into pirate radio and then was shot dead by a rival pirate radio station owner who also happened to be a Liberal MP. The look on your
that
face.
That is not the ending I expected.
No. And so Bob has been making a film about this guy's life and death, and in so doing has been speaking to Reg's widow, Dorothy.
Wow.
And Dorothy highlighted that sort of... what did she do? She signposted to Bob that their daughter, who was like 16 when Reg died, has written a play about Reg's life. And so uncannily... when Bob got in touch, this play was about to start being produced in Windsor Memorial Town Hall, of all places. And I know, yeah.
So what's the play called?
It's called... it was on like 2 summers ago.
Okay.
But one summer ago. But anyway, it was called Death of a Pirate, I think. Or she wanted to call it Death of a Pirate, and I think the director wanted to call it The True Story of Dorothy and Reg Calvert. Not quite so snappy, but anyway. Bob said, I need some advice, and I've essentially come on board as an executive producer because it's such an awesome project.
Yeah.
And it's got so much amazing archive footage and incredible music and good characters. Like Dorothy's amazing to see her being interviewed. She's so kind of poignant, and there's so much kind of depth to her and complexity. Anyway, so I've been working on that with Bob, which has been really great because obviously the Congo project's on hold.
So that's that.
So anyway, so I'm working on those things, and then obviously like really putting some focus into Rye and into my comedy course that I've been loving. So, but with Rye,
that's Rye, yeah.
Yeah, we've just recorded our first EP. Very.
Oh, hold on, sorry. I've just got a little congratulatory. I've just got a little congratulatory horn sound.
Oh, yes.
That I prepared earlier on.
Oh, wow.
I'm just going to go get it.
Wow.
There we go. So, well
done.
Was
that a real horn?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah. There's my horn over there. See? I just put it down.
I see it.
Good.
It's behind the books.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. So, yeah, we recorded an EP and essentially recorded four tracks live. I mean, it's not produced really in any way. It's just as we sound. But we wanted to get something out there. And so, yeah, so I'm really proud of that.
Can we, shall we, let's, can we have a little snippet?
You can have more, you can have a whole song if you want, Rob.
Let's have a song. What song are we going to have?
I think we should listen to How We Danced. Shake hair, rattle keys, lift skirts, and then you laugh and spin into space.
You're doing
Thanks, Rob.
Oh, not at all. You're doing a gig soon?
Yes, we're doing many gigs. But I won't say when and where they all are. I would just suggest that if you want to come and hear us play, you visit facebook.com/ilikerye, or myspace.com/ilikerye.
Awesome.
You were recording something, a solo album.
Yes. Yeah, I've been very lucky this year to have got to know and had the opportunity to work with a guy called Andrew Holdsworth.
Holdster.
Ah. You know, the Holdmobile.
Oh, the AH.
Fantastic guy, fantastic musician, it turns out. I mean, he was an engineer for the Barbershop recordings, and we got along and, you know, it worked. The sort of atmosphere of working worked. And I've had songs kicking around for a long time.
Are there any that I've heard?
Yeah, there will be, yeah. I mean, there's one that was written when I was about 16, but even just as a sort of labour of love, I think just to have a collection of them, and obviously it's good for the publisher, it's good for what I'm doing.
I thought you were going to say, and obviously it's good for the public.
Well, there's no question it's good for the public. I mean, wars are going to stop because of this, yeah, this collection.
What the hell is that? Hang on, put the guns down a sec, just stop shooting. What is that noise?
Oh, teasing. Yes, so anyway, and a couple that are Barbershop
songs. Seriously, it's like wailing. I mean, what is it?
I cannot fight with this in the background.
No.
God.
Should we just go and have a tea?
Exactly. So if it does that, then, hey, Nobel Peace Prize, probably.
Awesome.
So it's 10 tracks, and it's literally been done with Andrew and I sitting in his studio. Everything has been played in, although we are getting some horn parts done live, which is extremely exciting because I'm a bit of a fan of the sort of Jason Mraz style. It's quite poppy, a lot of the tracks, you know, and I'm really excited.
You've got your own horn just there.
I've got my... Just play a little bit there. And that's going to be kind of just out and kicking around and, you know... It's just very satisfying to get a collection done.
Awesome, Rob. So, can I hear one of your songs, please?
You can. I recommend it because there's a few that are still yet to be mixed.
Ah.
So I recommend that we have. Do you want an upbeat or a sort of thoughtful number?
Ooh, I'd like upbeat.
I think upbeat is nice. Okay, so this is. Well, we'll have it a bit later on because we just had a song, but I will play "It's Too Early," which is about that time when you're starting a relationship and you're very excited, but you got to keep it
real.
Chilled.
Yeah.
Real and chilled. You can't go straight into third gear. Too early for all those things. It's a pop song that was written for Lara.
Oh.
How about that?
That actually segues almost perfectly into a new segment that I wanted to introduce to the show. And that segment is called "What Life Lesson Have You Learned This Week, Rob Castell?" It's a punchy title for a section, I know.
I like it. Is the section called "What Have You Learned in Life This Week, Rob Castell?"
Mm-hmm.
Because
there's going to be another section
called
snappily titled
"What Have You Learned This Week, Rachel Castell?"
Yeah.
Great.
It's an adaptable title. You see,
just I like it.
Insert.
As long as Castell's your surname, presumably.
Exactly. Yeah.
Okay. Right.
We could ask our parents. What have you learnt this week, John Castell?
I think they're still learning. Well, okay. I've got a kind of combo answer.
Nice.
I've learnt that I know less, and that's okay. I've learnt that the sort of instability that seems to me greater than it was when I was, for example, 21, 22, is not necessarily my kind of life journey going backwards.
Mm.
It's just things are a little bit more complicated. Decisions are harder to make.
Mm-hmm.
Repercussions perhaps are likely to be more heavily felt. The sort of emotional responsibilities and working responsibilities are slightly greater, etc., etc. But all that makes me feel more confused, have more questions,
mm-hmm.
and feel less certain than I did about things when I was younger. And I've been struggling with that, but I've kind of just learnt to say, all right, that is the way of life. And actually, kind of the wisest man, probably, or woman, when they're older, will kind of claim that, you know, they know very little, in a way.
Yeah. The more you know what you don't know. As the wise man said.
You are pithy today.
Thanks.
Yeah. No, exactly.
Concision at work.
And
right there.
But that also comes hand in hand in, which I think is a sort of slightly late 20s quarter life crisis phenomenon, is just accepting that you're sort of floating around and that's all right.
Yeah.
It's maybe a Saturn return type thing, you know. I've sort of been, and also you can't really run away from it. You just have to let it happen. So just emotionally in my work, there's so many speculative things going on. There's so many kind of hopes and fears and things that I feel in the middle of, not being a young person, but not being a really stable, sorted older person. I still feel in the middle of all of that, but just to sort of enjoy the ride.
Mm.
There's a great Stephen Moss article about turning 50, I think, where he said, you know, life is a sort of tempestuous sea, and when you get to 50, you're the person in the lifeboat who's just giggling because it's quite funny that there's water coming in and you don't really worry about whether you know the boat's going to turn over. Where there are some people who are desperately trying to drive the boat, there are some people who are just jumping off the boat because they can't handle it, whatever. And I like the idea of being the person who kind of just drifts around in the sea, you know, whatever. So that's my sort of lesson, I suppose.
I like it.
Hey,
it's a good one.
Shall we move on to the next section?
Oh, what is that section, Rob?
It's called "What Have You Learnt in Life This Week, Rachel Castell?"
Or something like that.
It wasn't quite that, was it?
No, but close enough. I was thinking about that as I knew that you were going to ask me, because I thought, what have I learnt? But life lesson-wise, I have learned that it's all very well and good to look at precedents. Like, I think it's important to look at the people that have gone before you and how they lived and what they did right and all those things. But I think I really agonised for a very long time about not being the right kind of person to do something, or not having done the right things to...
Wait, I'm really sorry.
Yeah, you're not recording.
No, I'm recording. Oh. Can you take the tea cosy off? while you do
it. I forgot I had it on.
So seriously, it's just too, I can't handle it. I really wanted to like just let you continue, but I'm just not listening.
Oh.
I'm sorry.
It's so cozy.
Well, that's what
it really lived up to its name.
So yes, sorry.
Yeah, what I think for a very long time I sort of used to think, well, I'm not an artist, or I'm not I didn't start off being a performer in my working life. You know, I didn't identify myself as a performer of sorts. I didn't identify myself as a singer, and I sort of felt like, oh, I should have, in order for that to be valid, I should have done that earlier than now. And that it was too late to make a change or to make a shift or to start to classify myself in a different way. Because other people who were singers or whatever hadn't done, you know, they'd always said they were singers, or they'd you know, there was some path and I wasn't following it. And what I realised recently is that there is only one path, and it's my path. Like, there isn't a recipe for being a Rachel Castell.
No.
I'm the only, you know, and whatever I do, that is my story. It's like writing itself in retrospect, and I just had to, I let go of all these things where I thought it was too difficult to transition or too embarrassing somehow.
Oh yeah.
And that was really empowering.
Yeah.
So that was a good life lesson, I think.
That's a really good life lesson. I think because you inevitably are aware of your place in, you know, against everybody else in the world to a certain extent. I mean, I have that. But Tom said something to me, he often says, Tom from Barbershop Pro, he says, you should do what makes you happy. And I think, come on, Tom, you can't just say that. I mean, that's like too, it's too flimsy, you know, that's not a philosophy.
Shut up, Tom, you
say. I tell you what doesn't make me happy is you and your face.
Yeah, and your philosophies.
Yeah,
and
oh,
your
look, I've got 7 words for you. Yes, it was. I think
that's some kind of a talent. I can identify how many words are in a sentence.
Just like that. But it's right, as in, it like you said, it's your journey. It's your way. That's it. That's,
and also, that whole thing of just saying, and it's all right. Like, that's all right. It's fine. Yeah. I'm tiny. I'm nothing. It doesn't matter what I do.
No, that's another great thing, isn't it?
Yeah.
The like, insignificance of us.
Yeah. Yeah. Hey, Rob, can we have your song, please?
Yes, let's have the upbeat song. Here it is. It's Too Early.
It's too early for me to watch you when you sleep. In case you stir and see me and start thinking I'm thinking too deep. And it's too early for me to talk in tender tones or to whisper intentions of love in case I scare away your soul. And it's too early for us to even be anything at all, leaving me lingering in the air, waiting to find out how far I might fall. And it's too early for you to give yourself to me, I know, but even so, I'm telling you that I'm happy to wait and see. Whenever it's new, you risk a lot, fighting hard not to lose what you've only just got. And even though I'm handing my heart to you on a plate, I'd rather risk it all right now than end up telling you too late.
Oh, Rob, I loved it.
Oh, thanks, Rach.
I'm very proud.
Oh, thank you very much.
You should be sort of a singer-songwriter for your career.
Don't talk crazy to me.
No, it's not crazy. Is it true?
Thank you very much. I'm excited. And yes, it will be robcastell.com will be the way to kind of hear more news of it and things like that.
Great news. Okay, awesome. I'm running out of time. Actually, I have to go to a band rehearsal this very eve.
So say hi to the lovely guy from Rye.
I will.
Yeah.
Try. I just couldn't. I was caught short. I couldn't come up with anything better than that.
That was good.
Thanks.
So we're gonna do a quick review.
Yeah, quick pop culture review.
All right, I've got one.
Tell me, hit me, culture me up.
Okay, I got a good thing to do and a bad thing to do, and they were both part of the same experience. The good thing to do is to go to the Everyman Cinema in Hampstead.
I will go.
It's great. It's one of those cinemas where obviously less seats, but you can have a sofa. Or you can book a kind of bit to the side, which has got, you can put your feet up and you have a lot more comfortable space to yourself. And there's table service. So you go to the reception, not all the way through, but you know, you get there a bit early.
Yeah.
And you order your tickets and they say, yeah, go through. And they will bring you your bottle of wine and your nuts and your cake and whatever you want.
Wow.
It's just such a nice vibe.
How did they know that I wanted wine and nuts and cake?
Well, they don't do popcorn. That's the only thing that slightly I was confused by.
Well, there is a contentious issue about popcorn in cinema circles.
About the noise?
Well, about the noise and the mess, and also about popcorn as a kind of an icon of the multiplex. It's like associated by art house cinemas with the demon of the multiplex cinema.
It tastes so good, though.
This is the issue, right? So a lot of art house cinemas preserve their integrity and part of an identity in that setting for some cinemas is to say, and we don't do popcorn.
It does create a different vibe. They do like these lovely like honey coated cashews and things. Mm. You know? So that will take a bit of getting used to for me. And that's interesting about the popcorn thing.
Yeah, and I don't think it's right or wrong. I think I'm happy to have popcorn and I'm happy, you know, like I'm happy to. Mm. I'm not a massive fan of popcorn. I was a bit sick after popcorn and I always get it stuck in my teeth. But
and you have to have a drink with it because you just get too dry.
It's too thirsty. Mm. Yeah. Anyway, good. So that was a good experience.
And the bad experience, which was the film that I saw at the Everyman Cinema in Hampstead, which was the new Wuthering Heights.
Ah.
Which I know some people are really
raving,
enjoying. Not for me. I thought it was indulgent and long and slow and poorly written and not always very well acted either.
Very interesting. I want to see it because I saw Andrea Arnold's film Fish Tank.
Yeah.
And I loved Fish Tank.
Well, I haven't seen it, but I've heard great things. I think she has a place as a filmmaker, and I'm sure that that sounds like I'm allowing her a place, but you know what I mean? I think I can really understand why there's appeal, and it's a very different style of filmmaking. This one's a lot of over-the-shoulder, a lot of kind of very rough-and-ready camera angles and shots and framing. It's incredibly bleak. I mean, obviously, yeah. Wuthering Heights isn't like a barrel of laughs, but
it's comedy, isn't it? Isn't it sort of like Jeeves and Wooster, sort of banter?
It's similar, but she just underplays that a little too much for me.
Oh, shame.
Also, the Heathcliff is black, which has caused, you know, comment. I think kind of unnecessarily. And actually, there's some really interesting bits that people have cited in the book that. Clearly, Heathcliff was maybe ethnic or not Caucasian. Yeah. So I think that's good and interesting. And you know, but that's probably unfortunately one of the things that people are saying about it predominantly, rather than just kind of talking about it as a film in its own right. But I just think you have to, no matter how interesting and different your shots are, you have to give an audience something else to hang on to in terms of story, in terms of life, in terms of
Narrative, resonance.
Building characters properly, all that sort of thing.
Yeah, very interesting. Okay, good. I still want to see it because I think cinematically it sounds like an interesting film to see, you know, in a cinema.
Yeah.
But there are other... Oh, I'm so behind. Although I have been absolutely relishing my Love Film subscription.
Tell us, have you got a review for us?
I can give you a review, although it's not what I would choose as my pop culture tip of the week. But I definitely have enjoyed having Love Film because it's meant that I do add films to my list when I think of them, and then they're there. And even when I've forgotten about them, they just arrive in the post.
That's great.
Yeah, that's how I got Fish Tank. But yeah, no, pop culturally. On Saturday, I went to the British Museum to see a show, a show for children that an exhibit for children there that has been designed, or part of it's been designed by my friend Rob Flowers.
Fantastic.
Yeah, so we went to go and see that, but it closed at 3:30 and we arrived at 4. So we didn't see it, which is why I can't tell you very much about it. But what that subsequently meant was that we were like, oh, well, we're in the British Museum. let's wander around and look at things. And we started off in like the first room and got stuck there for ages because there it was a sort of a pick and mix of the British Museum's collection. But it had some of the oldest relics in the whole museum's collection in this one room. One item of which was 1.8 million years old.
I can't process that.
That is what I was going to say. My cultural experience of this week was coming face to face with something that was so old. And that's what, and you see, I saw the Rosetta Stone.
Oh, yeah.
I saw the Elgin Marbles. You know, it was so accidental because I kind of went there to see Rob's thing and I was on my way there, I was thinking, oh, you know, I've got so many other things to do. And, you know, Saturday was kind of one of those days where everything had a knock-on effect to everything else and things didn't get done, but it ended up being really good. So yes, that was awesome. I thought being faced with something so old it was a cutting stone chiseled by a very early human.
Well, that's great.
Okay, do we want to do quick shout-outs? I'd like to do a quick shout-out to my friend Marowa, who I didn't see last night. I was maybe...
Oh, my stomach.
I wonder what that noise was. I wanted to give a quick shout-out to my friend Marowa, the amazing, because I was supposed to see her last night, and then it got late, and I got drunk, and I didn't. So sorry, Marowa. I'm going to see you in the week for nails.
Nails? Oh, doing your nails?
Yeah.
Ah, okay. Well, I'm going to do a few shout-outs. So... Obviously, shout out to the Barbershopra team, who we start rehearsals for our Plymouth run tomorrow. Very much looking forward to them. And also a shout out to the previous members of Barbershopra who are not with us, but who we think about and who have obviously contributed to our journey. And hope that everybody's well in that world.
Yes, me too. Hi, guys.
Hey. You got another one?
Let me think. Who else needs a shout out? Who's been... general shout out to Gaynor. Just because she's special.
Okay. So.
Oh, shout out to Bob, who's doing the Reg Calvert film. He also has a podcast, and I will mention the website for that podcast on our website. I don't know what it is off the top of my head.
Fantastic. Well, I'm going to shout out to Tim Sutton.
Oh, yes, I'd like to shout out to Tim Sutton.
Okay. What are you never shouting met out him. To him about?
Just hello.
Well, he's all a right, great Tim. Man. Tim took me to an evening of Tall Tales at the Good Ship in Kilburn because we're going to do a little slot there in January. We had a great time. We're creating some stuff together. He's a fantastic musician and is working on an opera at the moment. So I hope that goes very well. And along with that, I'd also like to shout out to Dougal Irvin, who has just released an album called Acoustic Overtures. And these are two great musicians kind of just on the scene doing work and getting things going on. So that's my sort of professional shout out. My personal shout out is actually going to go to Dad.
Aww.
Whose birthday is next week.
Big up the Dad.
That's right.
I'd like to shout out to Dad for doing his brilliant Thanksgiving presentation. a shout out to Mum for cooking an amazing meal and just being Mum and being brilliant. Yeah. And shout out to the American family.
Absolutely.
Happy Thanksgiving, gang.
Transatlantic love.
Transatlantic love. TAL.
All right. Well, lovely podcast.
Lovely podcast.
Smooth.
Nice.
See ya.